Well, how are you today? Well, we're starting into the last day of this Congress with an exceedingly interesting news bulletin, which is that there's a flap on. There's a flap on, that's for sure. ITV published a news commentary by a Scientologist, ran it the other evening, Saturday evening, and the most ordinary figures, the most routine and non-scarehead figures on the subject of atomic fission have burst upon the public and upon Parliament, evidently, with a considerable shock and a tremendous flap with people running in all directions. This is very peculiar. Most of the data, in fact, any data that is pertinent data, which has been released on this subject, happens to be routine U.S. news release available for the last couple of years and isn't news. And the quote which was made on the air was simply a National Academy of Science of the United States, a bulletin made out of a summary report. Now, it's very true that the atomic bomb is going to cause a lot of congenital idiots. But the figure that is alarming them is not as bad as the figure really is. In other words, the conservative figure was given, which British scientists are to some degree in argument with. They say it's worse. This is an amazing situation, isn't it? Fabulous situation. One always can ask this question, why did people decide to wake up at this moment? Why did Parliament decide to wake up at this moment? Why did anybody? But that is well outside any sphere of influence which I have. The point here is that scientific data, when not under restriction by some government because of military secrecy, is the property of the world and always has been, and it would be a sorry day if it ceased to be. Freedom of information. The public has a right to know if 1,000 gallons of strychnine have been poured in to the waterworks. Wouldn't you say so? Yeah. And of course, when it finds out that this has happened, there are few who are liable to be upset by it. But certainly nobody at the top of the pile should go into a flap if the data has been well known for some time. If it has been well known, there's a possibility that it has not been well known. So our little Congress here, amongst ourselves, not really even open to the public, not attempting anything very sweeping. Last year, we were going to memorialize the government. Now we find the government memorializing us. You see, the whole subject of atomic fission is a subject of violence, the way it is done today. It isn't true that every new scientific development carries with it several markers. But it is true that atomic fission does, because its first use was in war and the slaughter of men, women, and children, school kids, at Hiroshima. It has carried with it a considerable reputation. But our position in this is very sharp and very clear, and I don't think I have told you anything more than this, and I don't think we understand anything more than this concerning it. One, The greatest danger from atomic fission and the testing of bombs is the hysteria it can cause amongst populaces, an hysteria which can grow so great that a populace can be thrown out of control. Now, you remember my saying that, I'm sure. That's point number one. Point number two, the people who suffer from small doses of radiation are people who have a bad health record. They are not the people who are in excellent mental and physical condition. It is possible to take somebody in excellent mental and physical condition and give him enough dosage to make him extremely ill. But it is my understanding of this, that the people who are hit are the infirm, the old, those who are liable to various shocks and upsets in life anyway. That factor has not been much covered by atomic energy releases, since it has not been much investigated by any except ourselves. Therefore, concluding the second part of this, those people who are in excellent condition and whose mental stability is beyond question need have little to fear of this particular test cloud that goes around the world at this time. Those are the only two points which I have made or would like to make, and so I am repeating them today. Now, under the heading of number one, a Scientologist by group auditing is capable of bringing a considerable calmness into an area which is upset. That's correct, isn't it? All right. And under number two, it is the business of a Scientologist to place people into a level of existence where they do not get sick with every stray germ that wanders their way. And this is one of our goals. Therefore, the two things which I have mentioned are completely germane to Scientology. In other words, these are Scientological viewpoints with regard to the atomic bomb. One, hysteria is caused, and certainly at this moment we are seeing an example of the hysteria which can be caused. Somebody says a figure over the air which is all of 2 years or 3 years old, which is not news anywhere in the world, not even really amongst the scientists of England. And this figure announced causes flap. Everybody gets upset about this. That is simply a symptom of hysteria, nothing more than that. And in the second wise, with regard to hysteria, we can do something about that. We know how people go out of control. We know a lot about what causes hysteria. And the second one, we do audit people up the line, out of range of re-stimulation. And all atomic fission is a re-stimulative factor. X-rays, by the way, are fully as deadly as atomic fission. A repeated, continuous application of X-ray to a person can bring about anything and everything that atomic fission brings about on a test pollution of the atmosphere level. X-ray does not bring about the Big Bang. You don't get a tremendous explosion and no town left, you see. But it does, X-ray plate by X-ray plate by X-ray plate, bring about a condition of high count in the individual so that if he gets a little bit more X-ray or fallout, he is liable to become ill. Now, these are very interesting figures, but remember that X-ray is used on sick people. Ordinarily, X-ray is applied to sick people. Now, as far as the genetic aspect is concerned of the atomic bomb, this is, of course, where everybody's attention is centering, because sex is so secret in this Anglo-American society of 1957. Thank the Lord we're not living in Victorian times, because we wouldn't even dare mention the fact that all of our children are now going to be born with their legs coming out of their ears. We wouldn't even mention that then. But it is still sufficiently secret now to pin people's attention on the genetic aspects of radiation. And these are the least important. This is of no consequence. You realize the baby mortality rate of a century ago because of puerperal fever was, percentage of populace, 100 times higher than atomic fission. The amount of blindness and other deformities caused by bad midwifery, bad medical practice a century and a half ago, so tops these radiation figures that if anybody wants to be shocked about it, be shocked about the way it was then, not the way it is going to be. Of course, it is an upsetting thing to think of 100 million populace having several thousand congenital idiots simply because of testing. But how about the people who are already grown up, who will become ill and ineffective and die because of that? That's a more important fact, I am afraid. It isn't going to spoil the genetic line. Not testing at its present rate. Yes, there are going to be a lot of people upset by it, but it's not going to spoil the genetic line. I'll tell you an interesting story that has nothing to do with radiation, but has a great deal to do with the genetic aspects of X-ray. You want to hear this?
Yes.
I was in hospital, browsing around, and I ran into a girl who had a delivery a few days before, actually about 10, 12 days before. And she had stayed over several days beyond when they would dismiss her, ordinarily. And she was lying in a very inert position. She looked very sad. And I asked the doctor, "What is wrong? What is wrong with this woman?" And the doctor said, "Well, nothing except the baby. When it was born, was surrounded by only half the placenta. Something had happened in the growth of the child that whereas the baby was all right, only half the placenta developed. In other words, this was a malformation. And she believed something was wrong with her that only half a placenta developed, you see? And this had so deprived her of her usual spirits that there she lay, not recovering. So this was not an occasion for auditing. I became interested in this. You understand that X-rays knock out and disarrange the genes, the way it's planned on the blueprint. And the placenta is represented in the genes as some of the genes, you see. And if one of these is deranged or knocked out, you'd get such a thing as half a placenta. Well, very well. I was thinking in terms of all the radiation that was in this area. There was a tremendous amount of radiation there. They'd been blowing bombs off 250 miles away, just repeatedly. Bombs, 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 more bombs. And I thought I'd better sneak up on this one, because you see, theoretically, it could be those bombs that had caused her genetic upset. So I said to her, "What does your husband do?" Thinking possibly he was one of the people who was associated with the tests, you see, on bombs. And she looked at me and groaned and said, "Well, he's a radiologist, an X-ray technician." "Oh," I said. "Aha, that's very interesting. 9 months ago, what duty was he performing?" "That's a long time ago. Let's see, 9 months ago, what duty was he performing?" Of course, I was asking for the period of conception. What duty was he performing? Let me see. Oh, yes, he was taken over for a special course of training on new X-ray equipment over to a certain military hospital, which was nearby, and for 5 or 6 days was doing nothing but set up and use the most powerful new X-ray equipment. Well, this girl was pretty well educated. I said, did you ever occur to you that it might not be your fault that only half a placenta developed? And a returning spark of interest came into her eye. She said, just a minute, 9 months ago. That's right. 9 months ago, he was over at the military hospital. Oh, he was just in showers of it 9 months ago. Oh, she says, wait till I see him. She went home that afternoon. Imagine her husband's never forgiven me. But now here was a certainty. There had been that much testing 250 miles away that it was an absolute certainty that it had caused the disarrangement of the placenta in this particular woman, right? That was a certain thing, only it wasn't at all. Husband was an X-ray technician, and he'd been on a big spree of testing. And, of course, his own genes had been very badly disarranged by the X-ray equipment at the time when the child was conceived. And as bad as it was simply that half the placenta was never developed. And just how the child carried through, and just how it was successfully born, the Lord only knows, but it happened. It did occur. Therefore, when you pick out a whipping boy, it is the fashion to ride that boy's shoulders from there on out and charge him up with everything. We say, well, is radiation loose in the world? Everything, then, is assigned to radiation. People do this fixedly. Well, many more things should be assigned to radiation right here at this moment than are being assigned to radiation. Many more things. Many. People are not at all aware of the tremendous effect that this testing will have and the low morale which it'll give people and that sort of thing. But, you know, they will assign more and more things to radiation. This is the way it'll go. More and more things. And just about the time when they are assigning just about enough, then somebody will say, you mustn't assign all these things to radiation, you see, and prohibit them from doing so. And then, obsessively, they will start assigning things to it until somebody starts jailing people for causing hysteria. And then they will start misassigning and assigning on a dispersal anything to everything, and it'll no longer make sense. They will no longer be capable of assigning actual cause. And then you have chaos. The thing to do is to be factual about it and say, just these things are assignable to radiation. Assign them, take them in stride, and a government would do extremely well to work along with an organization such as the Scientologist. Do what you can about them. Publish it rather widely that you're taking what steps that can be taken. Be factual about it the whole way. Don't try to play it down. Don't try to play it up. Just be factual. And go on from there, not only trying to do something about that, but the million other things that make life all but impossible for people here on Earth. Shortage of food can be much more fatal than longness on radiation. Right now, the starved condition of the Arab, his slave condition, a mental condition that tells him he can't have anything, makes it impossible for the Middle East to exist peacefully. And large responsible nations have tried to do something about the Middle East. They'll never be able to do anything about the Middle East until they solve this below poverty status of the Arab. That fellow has been pushed down since the days of Chaldea, straight on through. The history of the Middle East is one of extreme oppression and slavery. Something has to come along to undo all of those years and years of slavery. Something has to come along and undo them so that the people can again, within themselves, feel enough security to work, to win, to survive in this universe. Now, that's a worthy project, but do you know there's only one group on earth at this moment that could do anything about the Middle East? Scientologists. We know that a person can be placed so low that he cannot have. And if you try to give him anything, you lose. He'll just tear it up. We know that the Arab will continue to make nothing out of anything he runs into in the Middle East so long as his poverty is continued and confirmed. Ah, well, that looks to me like a very interesting international project, since that entire area sews up one of the great waterways of Earth, which has already caused an international embarrassment to the United States, a war with England. England's gone to war about this. The United States has been firing, reprimanding, and booting out diplomats on this till Washington looks like a day after a college football game, you know. Everybody's leaving town. And what is all that trouble about? Is it about John Foster Dulles? No. Is it about Eisenhower? No. Is it about any, even poor old Eden? Is it about him? No, it certainly isn't. It's all based on the fact that back through the years, many people have had a hand in placing those populaces in that area in a condition where they can never win. You know some of the people that had a hand in this? Genghis Khan. Now, you think of Genghis Khan as somebody who came out of Russia. Well, he did. But where'd he go? The Middle East. How would you like to have this chap who made pyramids of skulls at every crossroad as your ruler for a generation or six? Well, the Arabs had him. And Timur Ilang has been down there. Bayezid the Thunderer of the Ottoman Turk. Conqueror after conqueror after conqueror, nothing but oppression and iron heels. You think Germany has had fascism. Germany's fascism is nothing compared to the fascism of that. It's an impossible political problem unless it is entered at the level of the individual. A Scientologist would have to group process the living daylights out of the Arabs. And you'd finally get them capable of accepting some aid and assistance. How would you go about it? Well, you'd get some Arabs that could speak English, and you would educate the living daylights out of them until they could group process well. What would be the cost of such a program? Actually, it'd be at the cost of about one volley of shells from a fleet. Be that tiny in comparison to the rest of it. Now we say, well, there's another place in the world. There's India. Wonderful place. Except for people. What's the matter with those people? Can you help those people? No. You can't even govern them anymore. Anybody who goes in to govern India has great difficulty. Why? Because its people are below the point of no return by past technologies. Nothing man knew could have pulled up by the bootstraps the untouchable of India. Certainly not the Indian philosophies. They're all oriented in the direction of slavery and more slavery. So we come along to that problem. That's an international problem of some interest to us. And right now, one particular Scientologist is struggling uphill against this problem in the schools of India. one Scientologist. Isn't that interesting? Of course, that's as good as several battalions, but it's not enough. Before we become too concerned with these little oddities such as radiation, we had better become concerned with the true enemies of man, and man has many of them. First amongst man's enemies is man. Because man does more in one war than all the bugs of Africa have ever done. Man's inhumanity to man was a subject which was addressed with the philosophy of a chap from the Middle East. Christianity went a long way. But Christianity has not stopped war. It's done a lot, but it has not stopped war. Unless man can stop this international insanity, you will see this thing called radiation, the hydrogen bomb, the guided missile, used full out by somebody. It's all well to say, well, nobody will use it. Just about the time somebody's losing, up to that time they've been gentlemen, you see. They've just been killing each other with steel-jacketed bullets. Been gentlemen. And somebody starts losing. And about the moment that a Herr Hitler or somebody of that ilk is pressed down into the last cellar, or sometime before that, he says, boys, press button A. That's the end of that. Button A is wired up to a lot of guided missiles and requires only one man's decision to destroy an entire continent and so poison the atmosphere that maybe all food will perish, and then man's gone. The danger here is not radiation. The danger is man's uncivilized state. Unless something can come along and cure him of his barbarism, he is not going to survive. He has many enemies, if you want to pick enemies. The locust of Africa. The various fevers of India. These are enemies. The hailstorms of Kansas. All sorts of enemies. Why focus only on radiation? If man is to survive, he must first be capable of facing his enemies. And those enemies really aren't man. He just thinks they are. And until he can be brought to face his real, true enemies on Earth, he cannot be really considered to be a civilized being. Why? Because he's fighting the wrong targets. How man making such slow progress on every frontier can waste time to turn around and fight his brother is a little bit puzzling. How he can find time to do that is quite amazing. You take the Sahara Desert, if you were to put the Sahara Desert under cultivation and straighten out some of these economic situations down there, why, it would require far more effort than was put into the North African campaigns. Far more effort. It would have to be very carefully planned and have to go along. But he was already making some progress in this direction when all of a sudden up came World War II and he threw a North African campaign there and threw it in and broke up what little progress had been made. You can't keep overrunning an area with the terror of war and its destruction and decide that anything is going to stay there or anything is going to survive in that area. No, man has a madness, and it's called war. And that madness has really nothing to do with politics. Most people who go on a big, long chant about how you outlaw war are saying we must suppress national governments. That's the last thing I would ever advise. The truth of it is a very simple truth. A government becomes worried about its ability to control its populace and its neighbors and resorts to war. Well, what then causes war? In actuality, a weakness and insecurity of government. If a government were very strong, if a government felt very secure, if a government could see and was well upscale, it would employ the most peaceful, quiet methods of granting beings and getting cooperation from its various enemies, potential enemies. It would square them up. It wouldn't fight a war. You don't find an educated, secure man fighting with all of his neighbors. No, the person who fights his neighbors is a very insecure, not at all sane man. To bring about peace, it is not enough to suppress and smash down every single government in the world. That's just a motion in the wrong direction. That's how wars are caused. I want to point out something to you, that after the bloodbath of the French Revolution, France was in continuous war for decades. In other words, she was fairly well at peace so long as she had a king and a fairly strong government. But when that government was turned over to Robespierre's and Danton's and Napoleon's, what did we have? We then had a continuous state of war. To have nullified the tremendous wasteful efforts of France and all the suffering which pursued those various wars, it would have been necessary to have bolstered the French government, not weakened it. And so long as every nation is upset about every other nation, and as long as every nation refuses to bolster and strengthen its neighbor nations, then war remains a threat. If the United States is willing to grant beingness to the various other great nations of the world, and if they are willing to grant beingness to her, if England is willing to grant beingness to the great nations, and their willingness to grant beingness to her, all of a sudden you will see a security mounting up which will make war practically impossible. But these countries are still doing something which is quite wrong, that is, they're weakening the government of Russia. The trouble with Russia is its government is weak. Its government was overthrown by revolution, and she's been a threat to world peace ever since. That revolution was a gaudy, rough thing. Should never have happened. But the conditions of Russia should never have happened either. In other words, the non-civilized condition of Russia, its unenlightened state, for the last many centuries, are the direct result of this threat we call Russia today. Now, nobody's saying that we ought to throw everything overboard and admit communism and all this sort of thing. The truth of the matter is, communism is a losing philosophy. It was invented in Germany and is a German philosophy. It was invented in Germany a century ago. And long after that, the Germans thought it was idiotic and threw it out. And now the Russian has come back and given to Germany communism, which Germany was already too grown up to accept. And they're not buying it. Germany's not buying communism. They recognize it for what it is. It's one of their old, discarded political philosophies. But regardless of any political philosophy, unless Russia and its satellites can prosper one way or the other, they will continue to be a have-not nation. Maybe these people are have-not people. Maybe like the Arab of the Middle East, it'll be impossible to bring them up to a point where they can't have. And if that is the case, then sooner or later we will find ourselves at war with Russia. But the answer to the atomic bomb does not lie in the field of there shall be no further development of the atomic bomb. You know, and I know, that if a war weapon exists, it'll sometimes be used. The answer to the atomic bomb lays in the change of status of man and his national governments. These governments must be stronger. People must cooperate with them better. They must be strengthened. And the peoples of those nations must be addressed realistically and brought up to a point where they can feel some security, where they can have something, where they can exist themselves at peace with their own neighbors. And only then have you whipped the problem of the atomic bomb. All the atomic bomb is doing is catalyzing the necessity for this solution. That is all it is doing, and our only interest in it really is that. If a technology exists which can bring a higher level of civilization to man, if such a technology exists, then that technology should be used to the uttermost to advance that state of civilization. It should not be used to destroy or decry governments. It should not be used to propagandize and pull the rug out from underneath those fellows who are trying. It should be used to bring about stronger governments, more secure governments, and more civilized populaces. We are at a turn of the road. We are lucky that we know what we know. We are very fortunate to know what we know. But we're at a turn of the road. Man before could almost afford to go on in a state of barbarism. He could almost afford to do so. Today he cannot. He cannot afford his bestiality. He cannot afford his inhumanity to his neighbors. For many reasons, not the least of which is that the next war is the last war. You really shouldn't worry about the next war. It'll be over in 20 minutes. But why not take a crack at making that war unnecessary? The electricity board is doing a wonderful thing just now. It is putting up some 47, I believe. It has just put up 47 new power stations. It's now putting up, I don't know the exact number, but I think it is 12 reactor stations. Now, there is a peacetime use of atomic fission, and Britain is the first to seriously dedicate itself to employing atomic fission to the assistance of man and his works. This is an interesting thing. This hasn't received no great publicity throughout the world. Why won't man buy a forward advanced step? Why must he always seemingly buy blood, destruction? It's an interesting thing that Britain, the leader in these reactor projects, is planning to use atomic fission to put hundreds of millions more kilowatts up and down the length and breadth of the land to light homes, run factories, and supply power, which has formerly been wanting. Where's the news story? Where's the news story? Maybe we have some vague whisper of this. But that's very newsworthy. That would be of great interest in the United States. It would certainly swamp some of these boys who say we've got to build more bombs. It would bolster the hand of those that say we should use atomic fission for peace only. And the news hasn't been released. But over here, the news hadn't been released that there are going to be maybe 50,000 congenital idiots in the next 10 years because of atomic radiation in the atmosphere. We don't have a good exchange of communication going on here, that's for sure. But it's very interesting that the electricity board is doing so well with this project. Maybe you ought to know that atomic fission can be used for peace and would not thereafter throw off a great deal of test elements and, you know, and gamma in the air and so forth. You know what this reactor project is all about? Would you like to hear a little bit of something about it? It's rather funny, by the way, my telling you about this, because it's a British project. But it has not been widely released. However, down in West 1, the electricity board's offices down there, carry a tremendous number of billboards and bulletin boards and mock-ups of one kind or another concerning this particular project. It's not exactly been held quiet. Anyway, a reactor is simply this. It is a container, rather massive container, which will continue to contain such things as gamma, and into which is placed a small amount of radioactive material. If you just get an idea of a big garbage can up here. And then we put a little piece of radium, something like that, in it. You know. There's nothing, doesn't matter what. Uranium, they're liable to use almost anything. And then we've got that set there. Now we put the lid on it, and we bore a little hole in the side of it, and we turn an electronic machine gun on that little tiny piece of uranium, you know. And every time one of the electrons from the machine gun hits it, it knocks off a bursting particle. In other words, it causes a fission to occur, you see. Boom, bang, boom, bang. And every time one of these things goes bang, it generates heat. So now let's add to this garbage can inside of it a number of steam pipes. And then let's have a channel which goes over here to an ordinary steam engine and then returns the water back into the condensed pipes and system. See? Just an ordinary steam engine. And what do we have here? We have water coming back from the steam engine, going through this thing. The machine gun goes boom. The water's heated up by this little tiny explosion, which is very hot. And then goes over and runs the steam engine and condenses and comes back and runs past this little machine gun and the explosions and heats up again and goes through. And the steam engine, of course, drives an ordinary generator, and that goes to a transformer and it goes onto the electric lines, and somebody up the line makes motorcycles. That's all one of those reactors is all about. It's one of the simplest uses you could put anything to. Actually, there's no danger of fission getting out of control because there's really not enough fuel present to do very much. It's very hot stuff. Now, you can bombard even lower-order elements and still get that, so we're not even dependent upon a continuous supply of uranium to make these fuel projects possible. Are you aware of the fact that up in Wales and so forth, you're running out of coal? We've been running out of coal for some time. It's been getting lower and lower. It's getting hard to mine economically. Well, they used to put the coal in the garbage can and put a fire under it, you see? And then the coal would burn, and it would heat the water, and it would go through and run the generators. Now, instead of putting the coal in the garbage can, we put a little bit of fissionable material in it, make sure that it fissions, and we get the same system. Got the idea? Now, what is an industrial system but a great deal of cheap power? And that's really all it is. People over here are worried about automation. They haven't seen automation yet. They haven't. They haven't seen automation yet. The American assembly line has barely made its bow. There's still a great many steps being taken by hand here. People are worried. They're afraid that this will throw people out of work. If people work, they must have something to buy. If you give them money, there must be something to buy with that money. That's a fairly great certainty. Otherwise, the money is no good. You know, money is just as good as you can buy something with it, and just as bad as you can't. And that's all money is. It's something that converts into product. And taxes, of course. And that's all money is. Supposing you had the workman's idea of a wonderful civilization whereby everybody did piecework all by himself and was paid abundantly for it. What's he going to do with this abundantly for it? What's he going to do with his cash? Buy somebody else's piecework? Well, it isn't available because nobody else is moving fast enough to make enough piecework for this fellow to absorb. A workman ought to certainly have a radio. He ought to have a decent home. He ought to have nice furniture. His kids ought to be able to wear nice clothes. There ought to be good food on the table. There certainly should be something on wheels to take him places in this modern age. That's his idea. He believes this, whether he's Spaniard or a Frenchman or an American. I've talked to all of them, and they all believe they should have these things. Look, if they don't get made, nobody's going to have them. And that seems to be a point he overlooks. Automation must be standing there. There must be something that can produce enough so that he can have enough. You know, the society is existing only on a small percentage of its workers. The potential workers in the society are being diverted in so many different directions on non-productive levels. Like, let's take war weapons. Anytime you build war weapons, you've just expended a worker, everything it takes to support him and everything else. You've got to have something like automation, machine production, in order to make up for that. And that takes fuel. That takes fuel. And if a nation is going to be successful, it's got to have raw products, fuel, and willing workers. Got to have all those three things. And if it's short on one of them, it won't get there. You know, I know South American nations that have more raw products and more fuel and less workers than it's easy to imagine. And they're in a state of barbarism. People are still running around in breech clouts carrying bows and arrows. They've got the fuel, but they don't have, and the raw product, but they don't have the willing worker. This willing worker's not there. All right, what about this fellow? What if all of the workmen of England became unwilling to work? What if all the workmen of America became unwilling to work? Supposing somebody killed their will, their enthusiasm about producing things. Supposing somebody made life so horrible or so arduous they didn't see any point in it anymore. You would then again see a barbarism. And we, in Scientology, enter that field rather easily. We take up the problems of work, and you should look over this new little book on the problems of work. You can orient somebody with regard to work and make him brace up to it and have a good time with it, whereas he's been ducking it before. The Anglo-American society, if anything kills it, will die either under tremendous political blunders which bring about an atomic war, or this philosophy of work is too hard to confront. This philosophy of we must all be retired someday. This philosophy is our greatest ambition is to do nothing. You know that that is a gag somebody pulls on you. If you don't believe that, sometime when you're auditing a pre-clear, have him mock up somebody and deny him the right to work. Mock up somebody and deny him the right to work. Mock up somebody. And he says, I've been doing this. This is a dreadful thing to do. It's a gag people pull on each other. Somebody's having a good time. He's always doing something or other. He's building a bird cage or something, and somebody comes up and says, aren't you tired? You're working so hard. I should think after a long day at the office, you would be worn out and would be incapable of going on any further. What are you doing building a bird cage? That's the way it goes. Next thing you know, he goes to the office and somebody says something cutting to him about his work, you know, or something like that, and says, why didn't you add up those ledgers frontwards instead of backwards? And he says, you know, work makes me tired. All tiredness is willingness gone bad. People who are willing don't get tired. It's only when something makes them unwilling that they become exhausted. I could have somebody enthusiastically opening doors, you know, opening doors, opening doors, opening doors, opening doors, and then all of a sudden fix it so the doors wouldn't open, you know, and they go, and all of a sudden they're tired. So you say, well, they opened doors 222 times and that made them tired. Oh, no, it didn't. They opened doors 222 times and that made them feel pretty good. But the time they didn't find themselves able to open the door tired them out. Not only is he unwilling to open the door, but he's unable to do so. And he becomes exhausted. So people have to be told, and people have to stay in the frame of reference, that life is worth living and that things are worth doing. And if governments and civilizations continue to produce things to convince them that they are just slaves, that things are not worth doing, that they have to be pushed into it, that it requires a whip, when they fill the atmosphere full of little wiggly things that are going to bite their kids, you know, when they don't give them adequate health treatment, when they don't have adequate parks to walk into, when the schools aren't good and the education isn't good, and when they're told that there's no future for you, you're not going to open that door. Not just the workmen, but the whole society goes with the boards. The whole society. No society can exist upon a fabric of slaves. A society can survive only when built on the piers of willing men. Governments should take this into account. They, to some degree, do take it into account. Social Security, health programs. But they could take it into account more. The things I'm talking to you about in this hour are really more important than radiation. Wiggle wiggles that go through the air and bite your left ear. Man's inhumanity to man has always been present. And he has always been able to reach over and put his hand on a deadly and diabolical weapon. Whether that weapon was a club with a knot on the end of it, or a tower musket, or a new high-powered super-velocity bazooka, or a missile that guided an atomic bomb in at some tremendous velocity, remember this, it was handled by a man who was being inhuman to men. Therefore, a solving of the atomic bomb would not prevent atomic warfare. We have to enter this at our own reality, our own level, in an area that we understand. And that is to say, man can be, and can be made to be, by our technologies, more civilized than he is, happier than he is, more capable of advancing than he has been. That is our target. We're going all too slowly in that direction. That's because, to some degree, we consider ourselves bucking the powers that be. Now, we shouldn't be ever considering that. You'll find that a government will always accept a helping hand. But it is so scarce that it takes them a long time to be convinced it's being held out. Remember that. They will always accept a helping hand, but so few people help the government that they don't really know what the hand is out for. Men use governments to feather their own nests and better their own ends. But there are sincere men in government, and there are men in government trying to do what is right. Now, if we wish to go in any direction in the field of politics, God forbid, let's be sure that we go in the direction of giving the government and the powers that be a hand in bringing about a higher level of civilization and a better understanding of things. Otherwise, we will not have struck at these intermediate, tiny problems, such as the A-bomb, smallpox, bubonic plague, and all the rest of the oddities that confront men as his enemies. Now, what do we have, then, in Scientology? We have something which assists man, not something that fights his enemies. Man will fight his real enemies. He isn't fighting them now. That means that we are going out and fight his enemies for him. What are we, a bunch of mercenaries? Are we going to fight the A-bomb? Is the only people fighting the A-bomb? Are we the only people going to fight smallpox? Doing this all for man and sort of letting him sit there in the stew pot and do nothing? No, our job is to buck him up to a point of where he can confront these things. And if we can do that, on a very broad level, as we are doing it, in a smaller sphere, then we will have brought a better civilization to Earth. And that, I think, is what we're trying to do. I hope you agree with me. Thank you.